Welcome to Up to Date. I'm Steve Prasky. If you consider books to be windows to the world, then here's a question. Why are there so few librarians of color in the Kansas City area, or for that matter, around the country? And you can't help but wonder, what's the consequence of that? Are kids from diverse communities getting exposed to books that allow them to see the world through eyes that have viewed it under similar circumstances? And how important is that? Today we'll talk to three participants in a conference taking place in Kansas City this week that will be looking at these very questions, and these are questions that haven't gotten much attention. The Joint Conference of Librarians of Color convenes on Wednesday here in town. With us today is Gloria Tibb. She's co-chair of the conference's Local Arrangements Committee and is the Teaching and Learning Services Librarian and Diversity Liaison at UMKC. And Gloria, so nice to have you.
Good morning, Steve.
And also with us this morning is Maureen Sullivan. She is president of the American Library Association, and she'll be joining us in just a few minutes. Gloria, give me a sense of how you became a librarian to begin with yourself.
Steve, it was mainly through mentorship. I was mentored by the Osawatomie public librarian. Her name is Frederica Williamson. Mm-hmm. And as I was mentored by her, I watched how she knew all the library patrons that came into the library by name. Mm-hmm. She would know their reading interests, and she would maybe put aside stacks of books for them.
Yeah.
And if someone hadn't showed up at the library for a week or two, she would inquire about them. So she took me under her wings, and she started showing me and teaching me about librarianship. And I think that's one of the things that we have to continue doing in order to get students of color to consider being a librarian, because if you don't have a positive experience with a librarian, you can't be what you can't see.
So mentors are incredibly important in terms of bringing librarians of color into the entire system then.
Yes, and I have taken it to heart what Mrs. Williamson did for me, because I am a mentor myself in the Avanzando.
Right.
Programming, and very fortunate that the student that I am mentoring, Patricia Bear, she has decided to become a librarian and will be shadowing me at the conference.
Oh, that's interesting. Give me a sense of how UMKC is approaching this whole idea of encouraging librarians of color to join the staff and get engaged with library services, and how important do you think that is that it happens to begin with?
It's very important. I think academic librarians, and not only just academic librarians, we have to identify and we have to remain mindful of the unique needs of an increasing diverse student population, the demographics, you know, to ensure that when the students come into the library, that they do find it to be a welcoming environment. So over at UMKC, we are doing a lot. One of the things that is being done, we're trying to break down some of those stereotypes of librarians. I'm sure you've seen them, Steve, in the news or photos and in movies where when you come into the library, you got to be quiet. That mm-hmm. is no longer the case at all.
Really? Well, what happens now?
Well, now it's about the space. It's about the collaboration. Okay, this generation of
the collaboration between who?
With the students and
yeah.
the collaboration with the librarians in order for you to feel that you can approach us at the desk.
Yeah.
And even more important for students of color, that they're able to get library instruction and able to become comfortable with the library.
Oh, that's interesting. I want to bring Maureen Sullivan into our conversation. Again, she's president of the American Library Association. Maureen, it's nice to have you. Good morning.
I'm delighted to be here. Thank you.
Just give me an overall sense of what's happening across the country, Maureen. Are libraries across the country, you know, are they keeping up with the changing demographics within their communities in terms of the people on their staffs? What are you seeing out there?
I would start by saying for many of our libraries, it's a struggle because the changes sometimes come very quickly, and the people who work in libraries are deeply committed to being as responsive to the needs of their communities as possible. And it's a struggle because of the difficulty with economics these days, but also the diversity within those communities. But libraries are deeply committed to being as representative and as effective in their communities as possible, particularly with diverse populations.
Maureen, do you keep percentages of taxpayer-funded librarians in this country? What percentage they are who are people of color? And these days, do we know about the ethnic makeup of the library audience, for that matter?
The American Library Association would have some of that data. The more meaningful data often comes from what individual communities are able to track. And library leaders are very eager to stay abreast of those changes.
Okay. I want to bring David Troyer into our conversation. He's author of Res Life, and he'll be taking part in the conference this week. David was on our show earlier this year. David, it's nice to have you again. Good morning.
Good morning. It's great to be back.
David, give us a sense. How much does it still matter in this day and age that you know, an African-American child is exposed to works by African-American authors and Native American kids are exposed to works by Native American authors? How big a deal is it?
Well, I think it's a really big deal, but I think it's an even bigger deal that any kid, whether an American Indian or African-American kid, is exposed to all of the wonderful work that is produced by American writers, African-American, Native American, Asian American, Anglo-American. And libraries are the great place where all the books mingle on the shelves, and it's hugely important.
Is it as important today as it was 10, 15 years ago, David, or is it changing somehow out there?
Well, I don't know about kids, how important it is to them. I'm assuming it's as or more important than it's always been. Libraries are even more important than they used to be.
Gloria, what's your sense of that as you work at UMKC in terms of how important is it that that all kinds of books by all kinds of authors are available to the students who come into the library? Is it still a big deal, or is that importance lessened over the years?
No, if anything, it's become more of a need or more of a demand, because when the students come into the library, it's very important that the collection reflects the reading interests, that the collection also has answers to different topics, subjects that they're interested in. So collection is one way of being able to get students of color into the library and getting them comfortable with the library.
Yeah. Maureen, what's your take on all this?
I agree with Gloria's assessment. And the one thing that I would add is when anyone comes into the library, whether they do it through the physical space or through a virtual experience, not only do they have the opportunity to immediately find something that will be of interest or need, but they also have the opportunity to expand their thinking and their horizons about all the possibilities that are offered.
Maureen, when did libraries begin focusing on all of this? I'm guessing 20 years ago there wasn't as big a push as is being made today. Am I right about that?
And when you say all of this, tell me what you mean.
The push towards the diverse librarians, a diverse collection, the whole emphasis on diversity within the entire library system.
I actually can take it back to the mid-1970s.
Hmm.
And I recall at that time there was a very serious effort to ensure that we were doing the best we could to recruit librarians of color to the field, and we have continued to work on that through all of that time.
All the way.
And I can cite that because I was a human resources administrator in the libraries at the University of Maryland at that time, and I remember collecting the data and doing everything we could to recruit librarians of color.
And the association, Maureen, again, you said a few minutes ago, you don't have current stats in terms of who library patrons are these days, what percentage of them are people of color?
No, I don't have the data at my fingertips, but it is data that we regularly collect and pay attention to.
And would it be safe to assume that the percentage of people of color is increasing year by year, as is the population?
Demographics in this country, and libraries have to reflect the changes that are occurring in the demographics.
Yeah. Well,
you know, one statistic I can cite for you is there's some research that demographers have pulled together that suggests that by the year 2050, what I would call the emerging majority would be the largest proportion. In other words, more than 50% of the people in this country will be individuals of color.
Hmm. David Troyer, compare library services you had as a kid to what you're finding these days.
Well, Well, when I was a kid, you know, we lived 10, 12 miles from the nearest town, and that was Bemidji, Minnesota. And there was a great local library in town, and it was, you know, it was the highlight of my week. My parents were pretty hands-off. I could check out any book I wanted to check out, and so I ended up going without sleep for about a year because all I wanted to read was Stephen King in the sixth grade. So it was a frightening experience, but exciting. But today libraries are doing all sorts of things. I mean, the downtown Minneapolis library where I've lived for the past decade, I just moved. The library in downtown Minneapolis is an amazing, interactive, fluid space. There are all kinds of people and programs, and a great space for kids. It's not a place of quiet. It's a place of excitement, and I that replicates for design and library programming across the country as I go and talk about books. I think it's fantastic.
David, is it your sense that kids today even worry as much about finding, you know, someone like me, or do they just want a story about the stuff that they like, they want to read about, like you reading Stephen King?
Yeah, well, I think it has always been the case for kids and adults that identity is something which is plural and overlapping, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, as much as society might tell you that you're just one thing, you're not one thing. You're five things, 10 things, all at the same time. You're a boy. You're from a rural place. You're an athlete. You're a nerd. You're a band kid. You're Native American. You're the second son. You're the oldest son. You're the youngest daughter. Whatever it might be, you're all of these things at once. And so, when you say find books that reflect who you are, well, that might be many things.
Yeah.
For me, it wasn't simply finding books about being Indian. I didn't need to read about that when I was a kid because that was sort of what at the time felt like my burden, right? I wanted to read books about, you know, being cool, which is something I was not. And so, you know, the worry is, of course, in our programming is to think that, you know, when you say, you know, American Indian, you only mean one thing, or that, you know, a Native kid is only going to want one thing. But, you know, a lot of times we read not to see who we are, but to imagine who we might become. So we read ahead of the selves that are developing, you know, that the people we're becoming. And that's how you make your world bigger. So as much as finding books and programming that reflects people's ethnic origins, and that's hugely important, I always think it's important to remember that identities are multiple and overlapping, and human beings are complicated, and books are every bit as complicated as the people who write them.
So, David, you don't remember being a kid in Bemidji, Minnesota, not being able to find the books that you wanted to read as a young kid?
I don't remember that feeling, but the books that I didn't know existed, I probably didn't know I wanted yet. But I do remember my first really sort of profound love affair with a library is when I went to college. And I went to Princeton, and I walked into Firestone Library, which is one of the most amazing open-stack libraries on the planet. And one of the amazing things about that library is the fact that it is an open-stack library. You can go look for books, you grab them, you bring them, you check them out. And so in this virtual world where you can only find the things that you're really looking for, you go into the stacks, you're looking for one thing, and you get lost in some dead end, and you stumble on stuff you didn't know existed. You find a book, and then you notice the books still to the right, and you start reading them, and then before you know it, the day's gone.
Yeah.
And it was a magical place. It was a magical, amazing place, and I hope it and places like it continue to thrive.
We're talking this morning, if you're just joining us, about the lack of diversity in this nation's libraries and librarians, and what that consequence has on young readers and the library population as a whole. And we're wondering this morning, how well does your library offer materials and programs that reflect the diversity of the community? Our phone number here, 816-235-2888. Our email address is updatedate@kcur.org, or go to KCUR's Facebook page or tweet us at KCUR UpToDate. You know, David, you just were saying that you wanted to find books that sort of went way well beyond your Native American heritage. But even if kids aren't concerned about that, how conscious should libraries be these days about reflecting the community's cultures in its collections?
I'm sorry, could you repeat the question?
How concerned these days should libraries be about reflecting the community's cultures in its collections? If, you know, if kids aren't so wrapped up about finding a Native American kid, finding books about Native Americans, so given that, what should libraries do?
No, I think they definitely should be concerned. In this day and age, I think... especially, you know, in an election year, a lot of rhetoric about who we are, what America is, and this is true for communities of color too. You know, we often talk about who we are and what we mean, and if we're not careful, those conversations can become a little bit reductive. What America means is only one or two things. You know, what being African American means is only a few things, or American Indian only a few things, and so. For those of us discussions, librarians, teachers, writers, we always need to try and complicate our understandings of the things that we tend to simplify or want to simplify.
Yeah, yeah.
And once the library's collection, the collection that the library chooses to make, is one way in which we can continue to challenge ourselves to think beyond our own stereotypes, our own received notions, our own limited views. It's always a push. It's always a push. And the more complexity that you render, healthier your community. This is true for ecosystems, and this is true for cultural systems.
Yeah. Maureen Sullivan, president of the American Library Association, what's your take? How effective can libraries be in fostering diversity within various communities?
I believe libraries are very effective no matter what type of library we're talking about, and I so appreciate the way David was expanding our understanding in his remarks earlier, because what he was really referring to is the importance of particularly librarians, and we've been doing this for decades, taking each person as the individual that person is and understanding the complexity of the individual and the various ways in which we could describe them, but really taking each person and serving them based on what it is that they need, but also being right there at the ready to expand the set of possibilities for them. And I love the way David talked about it's not just about me being able to find something that reaffirms who I am, but it's also being opened up to the set of possibilities about who I might become. And you really, David, were so effectively describing what I've always thought of as the key role of any library, and that is to support the independent, self-directed learning that most of us very naturally seek to pursue.
The question on our table this morning, how well does your library offer materials and programs that reflect the diversity of the community? Again, our number 816-235-2888, and our email address is updatedate@kcur.org. Let's go to Erica from Kansas City, Missouri. Erica, good morning.
Good morning. I wanted to call in. This is my first time ever calling into the radio, but I love reading. I grew up as an avid reader, as one of the gentlemen was saying before, somebody who lived in the library and checked out tons of books for my entire life. And something that I thought was really important to point out, going along with what everyone was saying, was just how important libraries are for developing healthy identities for young folks. I'm African American, and I was born and raised in Kansas City, Missouri. And growing up in a community that was mostly white and reading books that were mostly about young white women, I connected with them because, say, Judy Blume's books explore just the preteen and teen experience. But in a way, in the back of my mind, there was this understanding that I was different, and it reflected what I was experiencing, but not exactly. And so... And growing up, going to my college, I was able to go to the library and learn more through that. But I think that is really important when you're young to not feel completely different and, like your experience is not being expressed, and for other people around you to have access to.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you for your phone call here. And Gloria, I'm just wondering how many librarians of color there are at the three campus libraries at UMKC. Do we know that?
Yeah, yes. We have four librarians of color. And that's why we've got to continue to try to increase the number of students that will go into the profession, because there's certain anxieties that students can have when they come into a library. And you can calm those anxieties down when you walk through the doors of a library if you're able to see someone that looks just like you.
You say there's four librarians of color at UMKC. Yes. Out of how many total, just roughly?
We have between 30 and 40.
So how big of an issue is that to you, do you think?
Well, it's a big issue because the two student population groups that we have the most of on our campus are African American and Hispanic students. And that's why I'm so pleased that Patricia, my scholar, has decided that she will focus and study and become a librarian after she receives her education degree.
Mm-hmm. Okay. As the diversity liaison, you review the applications of candidates seeking positions at UMKC, including the library. What do you look for that indicates that someone might be qualified to meet the needs of a diverse community such as the university?
I'm looking a lot at their organization involvement, like we have the five ALA caucuses. They're the caucuses that are taking part in the planning of the JCLC conference this week. I look at the papers, the publication. What are your topics and theme? Does it deal with diversity? Does it deal with populations of color? I even look at things like your education. You know, did you go to a historical black college or a college that focuses heavy on diversity? And also, I look at your involvement through ALA, like where you're a Spectrum Scholar, you know, all these different programs. They will give me clues. It may not necessarily mean that you're a person or librarian of color, but those are definitely strong clues once you have met all of our minimum and preferred qualifications for the position.
What's the pipeline looking like for potential librarians of color down the road? Do you have any feel for that?
Well, I'm presently serving on four search committees at the library.
Search committees for?
For librarian openings position, okay? And it is slim. I mean, it's because what you're looking at, there's so few of us of color. When I went and got my degree from Emporia State University, there was only two of us. They graduated. So when you look at nationwide, how many people are looking for qualified librarians of color, it is very difficult to come up with large numbers. So for me, sometimes if you end up, Steve, with 3 to 5 in the pool, you're doing good.
So if you are someone of color and you're interested in library sciences, that's a career field that has all kinds of potential these days, given the needs.
Yes, it does. There are definitely openings. There's, and I know Maureen probably knows more about this, but there's financial aid, possibilities through ALA program scholarships that can help you.
And Maureen Sullivan, tell us about that. Again, she's president of the American Library Association. What is available to, as inducements to get younger folks to consider library careers?
This is an opportunity for me to describe two of ALA's programs. But before doing so, I want to just underscore something you just heard from Gloria, and that is one of our real concerns is the limited pipeline of ethnically diverse individuals who are interested in a career in librarianship. And that led ALA to apply and receive a grant from the Institute for Museum and Library Services. That's a federal agency. And we were able to establish a program that we called Discovering Librarianship, The Future is Overdue. And this program is very much directed at improving the number and the quality of people in the pipeline. It's a 3-year project, and it's very much directed at recruitment of individuals from underrepresented groups into the field. And not only the recruitment, but the careful training and education and support for them as they pursue those careers. Gloria also mentioned Spectrum. And I wanted to describe that.
Yeah, please.
That also has been what I think of as a very successful program. So far, we've been able to award more than 600, probably closer to 700 scholarships to students from traditionally underrepresented ethnic backgrounds to come in and pursue a career in librarianship. And the individuals in this program are talented, they're entrepreneurial, they're smart, and they're also individuals who are deeply committed to increasing the diverse populations that we serve, but also the diversity within the profession, and very much have as a strong value collaboration and inclusivity, those two values being very strong.
And your view, Maureen, when I asked Glory about the pipeline, librarians of color who might be coming up down the road, what's your view of how robust or how slim that pipeline is these days?
Well, the challenge is in that we don't have the pipeline coming out of the undergraduate programs. So we have to keep in mind that we're talking about professional education that's at the master's degree level. So we're limited by who's coming out of the undergraduate programs. But another factor I have to be honest about is, while most of us in this field are really here because of the joy in the work, we're not making the kind of salaries that are competitive across the workplace. And that's a challenge, because often people from these ethnically diverse groups who are pursuing master's degrees have opportunities in other fields. So it's a source of competition for us.
And that's a
which
function.
Is one of the reasons. It's the main reason why we want to promote the kind of work that we're able to do and what the joy is in being part of this profession.
And, Maureen, that's a function of cities and counties facing all enormous budget cutbacks these days. They don't have the money available they used to have to pay librarians.
That is, in effect, because the reason that's important is because it has led to cutting positions. But the salary has never been commensurate with the kind of value that librarians' work is contributing generally to society.
Yeah. David Troyer, what's your sense of why there aren't more Native American kids who might be interested in careers in library sciences? You there, David?
If I heard you correctly, you asked what's my sense of the interest in Native kids in library science?
Yes, sir. Right? Yes.
I couldn't say. I hope it's growing.
Have you come across many Native American librarians yourself, David?
A few, and Minnesota's been really good at creating discussions across all sorts of lines between the University of Minnesota and the Hennepin County and other Minnesota library systems, between reservations and the city and reservations and the university. And there's a lot of work, you know, in libraries, a current that flows through all those different watersheds.
Yeah.
So maybe I just come from a really lucky place.
This hour we're talking about libraries and the importance of diversity among librarians, diversity among the collections of books that patrons encounter. We're visiting today with David Troyer, who's author of Res Life. He'll be taking part in the conference this week. Gloria Tibbs is co-chair of the conference's Local Arrangements Committee. She works at UMKC. And also with us is Maureen Sullivan. She is president of the American Library Association. Maureen, I'm just wondering, what does the American Library Association do in terms of making librarians sensitive to the diverse populations that they serve these days? What kinds of programs do you offer along those lines?
The association has an office for diversity, and that office provides regular information updates and resources. It's that office that sought the grant funding for the two programs that I described earlier. We also have 11 different divisions, and each of those divisions is targeted at a subset of the profession, and there are many activities, research, programs, the kind of services that even Gloria was suggesting earlier in this call. It's a key area for constant attention on the part of the association as well as all of our members.
We had this email from a listener. The Blue Valley School District in Johnson County is 92% white and only 2% African American and 2% Latino. Unless we expect our children to grow up and live in a bubble, white children also need to be exposed to non-white authors and role models. Jake from South Kansas City writes this. The Mid-Continent libraries, he says, are well-stocked with diverse authors of culture. Is that your sense too, Gloria? Do you have any feel for that?
Yes, I think libraries as a whole, Steve, have moved more in that direction as far as their collection really do reflect the communities that they're serving. And we have some excellent, you know, authors out there that are writing and getting their works out in the library. So I would concur with that.
I wonder if you can give us a sense. There's this big conference taking place in Kansas City, Wednesday through Sunday in Kansas City. It's the 2012 Joint Conference of Librarians of Color. Gloria, how often does this conference take place?
The last one was 6 years ago. I was there in 2006, and we're so excited. We have over 800 library professionals and educators that will be in the Kansas City area. And in my position as co-chair with Kimberly Reed, who is the other co-chair, we've been working hard with a volunteer group of librarians to roll out the red carpet for our guests.
Mm-hmm. What do you hope this conference accomplishes?
Well, I hope it accomplishes awareness. There's like five or six different tracks that are going to be offered. Of course, one dealing with diversity. There's a track on collection. There's also going to be the opportunity for librarians to network and exchange ideas and to make that type of connection where we're all together in one city. And that can only strengthen us, Steve, as we move forward.
Why does this conference just only take place once every 6 years?
Well, there is a large amount of planning that goes into it, Steve. I know.
Easy
just
for me to say,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, yes, you're staring, I know.
You're
that's why I kind of laughed there.
Here. Yeah.
I know from the local arrangement committee, like I said, we've been working on it for over 9 months. And when you plan a conference this large and you have at least seven different tracks and sessions that feature speakers and skill building workshops and all these different areas, it does take a little time.
David, we haven't had a chance to visit since you were on our show 6 months ago talking about your book, Res Life, An Indian's Journey Through Reservation Life. Give us an update. What's new since your book came out?
What's new in life? Or
no, what's new with just with your book and with this country's awareness of what's happening with Native American populations and frankly, life on the reservation?
Oh, I don't know. I mean, it seems to me that the book itself is... It had a great birth, and its childhood is really great, and I'm hoping to move it into a sort of smooth adolescence and adulthood. So it's been out 6 months, and the book has been doing really well. As for the country, well, that's harder to say, but there have been some exciting news cycles, which are both disturbing and alarming and bizarre and funny. Elizabeth Warren being one of them, the race in Massachusetts, and American Indians tend to sort of get a lot more airtime, a lot more play during these big election cycles. It's as though the country is checking on its own conscience and needs us to do that. So we always kind of crop up, and I'm never satisfied, I guess. And a lot of the coverage, although it's good to get coverage, has been along the lines of the same kind of focus on trauma as opposed to triumph, I guess.
Yeah. How has your book been received? What kind of responses have you gotten around the country as you've toured different communities?
Well, I'll never ask the author, right? Because I'll just accentuate the positive.
Well, yeah.
It's been really good. I've been surprised by the goodwill and the generous spirit of readers. And one of the things I did to promote the book was I went on a library tour of local and regional libraries in northern Minnesota.
Mm-hmm.
I think I went to eight small libraries in tiny towns, Minnesota, Hackensack, Minnesota. And I was nervous about the tour. Growing up where I did, these off-reservation towns were not always the most welcoming place for Native people. These small northern towns, there's a lot of both outright and also covertism when I was a kid. And so I was actually quite nervous. But I have to tell you, these libraries were a place for people to gather, and I had huge audiences in these tiny places, overflowing people, overflowing with goodwill and curiosity, and it was, you know, easily the most fun and the best part of the whole promotion.
You know, just
the book. I loved going to those places.
David, just one more question about your book. I know we're getting off track here a little bit, but your book was so interesting to us here. In your book, one of your main points, you called reservations places of surplus, which is just the opposite of what most people think, and I think what you were referring to just a minute ago. Why did you call them places of surplus?
Reservations places of surplus?
Yes.
Well, there's you know, we tend to imagine them as places with a deficit where there's less money and less opportunity and less health and you know, less access to education and, you know, and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And while all the issues I just outlined are vital and problematic, I think of reservations as places where there's more of everything. Maybe more pain, more poverty, and more, you know, dysfunction in some ways, but also more opportunity and more goodwill and more creativity and more laws, lots of everything, not deserts, right?
Yeah.
Well, but I want to, David. They're fecunds, I guess.
David, so good to hear from you again. Again, David's book is titled Res Life, An Indian's Journey Through Reservation Life. Great to visit with you again, David Troyer.
Thanks for having me.
You bet.
Thanks for highlighting this libraries. I think it's so important.
All the best to you. And I want to thank Maureen Sullivan again. She is president of the American Library Association. Maureen, nice to have you.
Thank you.
And Gloria Tibbs, who's co-chair of the big conference coming up this week on diversity in libraries. She works at UMKC. Gloria, it's been just a pleasure. Thanks for taking time with us today.
Thank you.